All right, motherfuckers, you know what the podcast ain't gonna do? It ain't gonna record itself. Yes, I wish it would. Oh, I wish the podcast would just record itself so I could just sit here enjoying the morning, watching the little bunny rabbits hopping around outside, reading a book over here, reading The Stringers by T.J. Martinell, enjoying the sunrise, drinking the coffee. But oh, no, the podcast does not record itself, and thus the great one has to stop doing those things that he enjoys doing. Oh, it's just a beautiful morning, but no, we got to ruin that because we got to yell at the internet about how motherfucking stupid women are, because women can't stop being stupid, and I can't stop yelling at the internet, and there it is. And you? Let me tell you, you can scream and shout and whine and cry and snivel, piss and moan and look for a safe space. You can shove your opinions up your ass the way Biden's cock is something to keep in company. Or hey, you can never forget the third possibility that you are wrong and I am right, and that I have been right for 18 fucking years of yelling at the internet, even though I didn't start this podcast off yelling at the internet. I started this podcast trying to be reasonable and rational and intellectual and well-spoken and not using bad language, but fuck it. Fuck all of that. Fucking hell with it. Homie, you ain't got time for that shit anymore. When you're surrounded by fucking... Right? Look, guys, normally you walk around the house, you don't try to break anything, right? Okay, but if you're walking around the house and the house is on fire and fucking bombs are dropping out of the sky and there's fucking paragliders descending on your rave out in the desert and people are shooting at you, you can't be gentle anymore. You can't, oh, I don't want to break anything. No, you just gotta fucking run around and break shit. I don't know what any of that has to do with anything. Good morning, children. How the fuck are you? It is a beautiful morning outside. The great one was reading The Stringers by T.J. Martinell and drinking coffee and enjoying the sunrise and looking at the cute little bunny rabbits hopping around outside. But no, no, the great one can't do that anymore because everybody's out there going, great one, when are you going to record a podcast? When are you going to yell at the internet? When are you going to dance for me? Dance for me, internet monkey, dance for me. Oh my God, that was racist. You guys ever watch, is it ESPN? I'm not even sure, because it's always on at the gym. They always have the sports channel on one of the televisions at the gym. And there's that black guy on there that he's on there all the time. I don't think he ever goes home. He's on there all the time. And he does literally Hitler look like a fucking monkey in a suit. And he gets all agitated. He starts making these faces. And I'm just like, my God, it is a fucking monkey. It's literally Hitler. They dressed up a fucking monkey and they're just superimposing words over its moving lips. All right, where were we? I remember we were embarking on a voyage that was going to be a good time. I gotta recombobulate myself here. After I have a drink of water, give me a second to recombobulate. Great one. Why didn't you recombobulate before you started recording the podcast? Who's doing this? Do you want to come over? Do you want to come do this? By the way, I just looked at emails this morning. We'll go more into it. Somebody sent me $100 because they want me to do a movie review. Guys, you have to read the instructions. How much does it cost to get the great one to do a podcast episode on a topic of your choice? $111. When you send me $100 and request me to do a movie review, you're $11 short. Guess what you get? Because here at the Cynical Libertarian Society, I expect you to read the fucking instructions. It's not that hard. Maybe it is. I don't know. Everything is an intelligence test, right? Wuhan hoax, intelligence test. Everything's an intelligence test. So anyhow, somebody's $11 short. We'll see what happens. You've sent another 11, well, I don't know. Maybe if you fucked up, maybe you have to make up for that the second time if you want your podcast episode. Maybe you have to send more than just $11. I don't know. You know, maybe you don't have to do anything. You can tell me to fuck off and die, right? I don't own you. You don't have to give me a goddamn thing. You can shit right in my face. Do whatever the fuck you want. You do you. Okay, like the girls, you do you. I'd rather do me than do you, honey, because you're fat and you're stupid and you have purple hair and you have a tattoo on your fucking chest. You're a freak. All right. The fuck are we doing here? For many years, the world's population seemed to be rising at a steady clip. If the world's average fertility rate in 1970 had remained consistent, and still held true today, the global population would be 14 billion, or nearly double what it is currently. And once again, we can cast our mind back. I've talked about this many times. Paul Ehrlich and other people like him who all predicted, oh, the population's going to explode and we're all going to starve to death and none of this ever happened. But things didn't play out that way. While the decline in sperm counts in Western countries has undoubtedly played a role in this decreasing fertility rate, other factors are influencing these shifts too. In the United States and many other countries, men and women are waiting longer to get married, and they're having their first child at an older age, which leads to smaller families. Once people start having fewer children, they're unlikely to stop because they may discover that having fewer offspring is easier to manage and more affordable. Once people start having fewer children, they're unlikely to stop. As if you can go back in time and have more kids or something. A leading cause of this downward fertility trend, according to a 2018 report on global fertility rates, reflects the increase in women's choices. Women's choices, which have grown exponentially in some parts of the world. In particular, increases in women's education levels and women's reproductive rights, otherwise known as murdering your unborn children, which includes the availability of contraceptive methods around the globe, are driving the declining birth rate. Yes, when women don't have children, the number of children born will go down. Smart people didn't need this explained. The women's going to the colleges and all this other, this is not a good thing. Once again, women, and we see here the selfishness of women. You know, well, I'm going to go to college and I'm not going to have the kids and, oh, there's a deer outside. I'm going to do all this stuff. Okay, great. And then when you're old, because you're going to get old, you're going to expect money from the government. Well, where's the money from the government going to come from? Who's going to be paying the taxes that the government will be able to collect, steal, to redistribute to you if you don't have any kids, right? Well, oh, we'll just import more immigrants. And we see that women, to them, it's less important to pass anything. It's the whole boomer thing. No one cares about passing anything down anymore. Why would we have kids? We don't want to pass anything down. We only care about ourselves. The concern for the future generations is gone. The women's would rather go to college, get their education, get married to their diploma, go get a career, sit in a cubicle, make a bunch of money, and do TikTok videos about why they can't find a man. They'd rather do all of those things than just have children. The correlation between a young woman's educational opportunities and the number of children she's likely to have is clear throughout the world, but it is particularly noteworthy in countries where historically girls didn't have the same educational opportunities as boys. A 2015 study by researchers from the Harvard School of Public Health examined the effects of schooling on teenage fertility in Ethiopia, based on education reform policies that were introduced in 1994. The researchers found that each additional year of school led to a 6% reduction in the probability of teenage marriage and teenage childbearing. Similar relationships have been found between increases in female education and lower rates of early childbearing in Indonesia, as well as Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, and other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, where historically the gender gaps, got this fucking sentence, where historically, God, this fucking sentence. Women cannot fucking write. They just can't fucking write. You know, in T.J. Martinell's book, The Stringers, it takes place in this alternate future, which isn't really too alternate and not really that future because it actually looks a lot like the world we live in. You're not allowed to be a journalist and write journalism on news sites unless you have a license and everything you write has to be vetted. We really should implement the exact same thing for women. Women should not be allowed to write unless, number one, they're licensed, and then number two, everything they write should be vetted by a man. And then as far as the licensing goes, we should just not issue license to any women to write, and this would solve the problem. Let me try to fucking get my way through this fucking sentence that is way too goddamn long and has too many commas in it and too many unnecessary words. Hey guys, did you know the more education women get, the less likely they are to make babies? Well, yes, great one. We did know that. We are not woman scientists who need a bunch of studies to tell us shit that is blatantly fucking obvious. The gender gaps in secondary school enrollment between boys and girls have been sizable. What's more, between 1950 and 2016, dramatic declines in, God, these fucking sentences. What's more, comma, between 1950 and 2016, comma, dramatic declines. Why can't you, sweetheart, between 1950 and 2016, dramatic declines in the birth rate occurred in the Republic of Korea and Singapore, period. I want to rewrite this fucking book so that it could be understood by people who have an IQ over 75. These long-winded fucking sentences with all the unnecessary words. This is women. Women, oh, they're such fantastic communicators. Isn't it? Aren't we fortunate? Guys, aren't we fortunate to be surrounded by women who are so caring and compassionate about the future generations that don't exist because they're not having any babies. And at the same time, these women, they're such amazing communicators. Their communication skills are so fantastic. God, this is fucking painful for me to read. Let me read this fucking sentence this woman wrote. What's more, comma, between 1950 and 2016, comma, dramatic declines in the birth rate that occurred in the Republic of Korea and Singapore coincided with heavy investments in education for girls, comma, efforts to increase women's participation in the workforce, comma, and high rates of urbanization, period. Yes, when you transfer money from people that earn it to an education system to educate women, and then you try to shove the women into the workforce, and you put the women in the city where they can go to nightclubs and have sex with random niggers, yes, the birth rate will go down. Once again, those of us who are smart don't need science to tell us these things. Indeed, urbanization has been acknowledged as a significant factor in the fertility decline of recent decades. Yes, urbanization. So once again, you urbanize, you build big cities, you pack the women into these big cities. The bigger the city, what's the bigger the city? Well, the more men around her, the more choices she thinks she has, the more cosmopolitan she thinks she is, the more girl bosses she's surrounded by, the more time she has to spend working in order to pay her overpriced rent. Also, the more pollution, the more chemicals, the more stress, all of these things are going to add up to both to decrease birth rates for the two reasons. Because number one, she's physically unhealthy, right? People living, the bigger a city you live in, I have no data to back up what I'm about to say. However, if we went out and we tried to find the data, I guarantee you what I'm about to say is true because I have common sense, okay? The bigger the city, the more sick people you're going to have in it. There's going to be a correlation there. Because city living is not conducive to being healthy. The more you live in the city, the more stress you have from the traffic, from the noise, from the crime rates. The bigger the city you live in, probably the more contaminated your water system is, the shittier food you're eating because you're eating more fast food. You don't have fresh grown vegetables and shit. You don't have a farmer's market to go to. Right? You're in a hurry all the time. You're eating shitty food. You're exposed to more pollution. All of these things, the stress, the physical factors, the chemicals, the pollutions, all sorts of different things are going to come into play. And thus, I can look at that situation and say, yeah, statistically speaking, you look at New York City, the percentage of the population that is mentally and physically unhealthy is going to be greater than the percentage of the population in like a small town that has 4,000 people in it. So you send all these women, as women move into cities, all of this stuff is going to contribute to the fertility rate going down. Their fertility rate is going to go down because they're going to have less desire to get married and reproduce because there's too much other stuff going on in their life. And their fertility rate is going to go down because their bodies are going to be more and more polluted and unhealthy and incapable of getting pregnant or carrying a child to term. Indeed, urbanization has been acknowledged as a significant factor in the fertility decline of recent decades. Between 2011 and 2015, women living in rural areas in the United States were 32% more likely to have had three or more births than women in urban areas. This may be partly because in rural areas, children are often viewed as valuable commodities. As part of the free labor force that can work in fields, feed the cows or horses, collect eggs, or handle other essential chores. In cities, by contrast, kids, beloved as they are, become more of a financial burden than an asset. Another body to feed, clothe, educate, and rear, and also send off to daycare, because it's not like you're going to raise your own kids, all of which is generally more expensive in a city or suburban environment than in a rural area. Given between 2000 and 2016, the share of people living in urban areas in the United States has remained steady, while the proportion has increased in suburban and small metropolitan areas and decreased in rural areas, it's not surprising the nation's fertility rate has been declining. And then, of course, women are also fat, ugly, and obnoxious, which contributes as well. Despite the downturn in birthrights, take two. Despite the downturn in birth rates in the Western world, a large swath of the world still has fertility rates above replacement level. I wonder what part of the world that might be. In Chad, it's 5.8. In the Congo and Mali, it's 6.0. And in Somalia, it's 6.2. Good to know that Somalia is still churning out plenty of niggers to send to Minnesota. So while the fertility rate is declining in some parts of the world, otherwise known as the parts of the world that have Western civilization, or what's left of it, it's still high in other regions, particularly certain African countries, which is why the world's population is currently increasing. And I'm all for birth control on one particular continent, and among, of course, one particular group of people that are not on that continent, but they're kind of close to it. We know who we're talking about. Nevertheless, the planet's population growth isn't likely to continue the way demographers once predicted. The United Nations Population Division, has developed various scenarios based on statistic models to project the growth trajectories of the world population. Of particular interest are three scenarios called high, medium, and low variance. The medium variant, which many demographers who have been wrong throughout the entire existence of themselves, they've been right about nothing yet. Oh, we're all going to starve to death from overpopulation. People haven't been right about a fucking thing yet. The medium variant, which many demographers consider to be the most likely to play out over the rest of the century, is a middle-of-the-road scenario. In 2019, the UN's medium variant, God, this fucking estimated world population in 2100 of approximately 11 billion. By contrast, the high variant, why am I reading this shit? Who gives a fuck? Basically, here, they've made three predictions. The population of the United States will either, the population of the planet Earth, holy shit, get my brain together. The population of the planet Earth will either be 11 billion, 15.5 billion, or 7 billion. I mean, that's not really a prediction. Yeah, it's going to be somewhere around one of those. You're just throwing shit at the wall. These are not predictions. This is called guessing. While the medium variant scenario is widely quoted, some demographers and population experts, disagree with this projection. Jorgen Randers, PhD, a Norwegian academic who co-authored the 1972 book The Limits to Growth, once warned of a potential global catastrophe caused by overpopulation. He has since changed his mind. Yes, because in 1972, he embarrassed himself by being stunningly wrong. So, oh, good for him. He changed his mind. In a 2014 TEDx talk, the woman is quoting fucking TEDx talks. TEDx talks are not reality, okay? TEDx talks are a way for white people to spend 7 minutes listening to somebody else say something and then pretend that they're intelligent. He stated, quote, "The world population will never reach 9 billion people. It will peak at 8 billion in 2040 and then decline," unquote. Randers believes the primary driver of this decline will be that the world's women will choose to have fewer children than in the past. And yeah, I think that this is definitely where we're going, because yes, women are choosing to have fewer children, and that's not going to change unless women become property. That's not going to change. And they're going to continue to choose to have even fewer children. And then secondly, the biological side of this, right? The chemicals, the unhealthiness of the population, the inability of women to get pregnant, whether it's because she's infertile or whether it's because the man is infertile, right? All of that is only going to continue to get worse, right? People in especially Western countries are not going to get healthier. The amount of pollution and medication and chemicals and yada, 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 it's not going to go down, right? So the situation will only get worse. The only situation will only get worse. God, I can't talk. It's only going to get worse. So yes, the whole overpopulation thing, it's not a problem. Other experts echo his beliefs. For example, a 2013 Deutsche Bank report said, we're getting predictions on fertility from banks, okay? Suggested that the planet's population will peak at 8.7 billion in 2055, fall to 8 billion by 2100. Demographer Wolfgang Lutz, PhD, founding director of the Wittgenstein Center for Demography and Global Human Capital in Vienna, Austria, believes the populations that are experiencing low fertility rates are caught in some kind of low fertility trap. Yeah, it's called feminism. The gist of his hypothesis is that, quote, once fertility has fallen below certain levels and stayed there for a certain time, it might be very difficult, if not impossible, to reverse such a regime change, unquote. And yeah, I would agree. Once the damage feminism has done has been done, you're not going to be able to reverse this. Because even if somehow in the future women decide they want to have more children, you know, white women in North America decide they want to have more kids, well, thanks to the women today having fewer children, there's going to be fewer white women in North America, say 50 years from now, to have more kids. This hypothesis is based on three independent elements. As a society experiences a drop in fertility rate below replacement level, there will be fewer women of childbearing age, which means the number of subsequent births will decline. New generations embrace a smaller ideal family size, based in part on the lower fertility they see with previous cohort. Good God, how long is this fucking sentence? This woman cannot fucking write. This is causing me fucking intellectual pain to try to read this. So basically what I just said, there will be fewer women of childbearing age, which means the subsequent number of births will decline. Now, newer generations embrace. I'm editing this. I can't fucking. I'm serious, guys. All three of these points are in one goddamn sentence filled with commas. This fucking sentence in the book, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's 9 fucking sentences across the page long. It's literally Hitler almost. It's like an inch and a half, almost 2 inches of text. One fucking sentence with commas all over the fucking place. Women can't even write fucking sentences. How are they going to have children? New generations embrace smaller ideal family size, which creates sociological reinforcement. Yeah, we see this now. People go, oh my God, why are you having so many children? Don't you know that there's overpopulation and pollution and global warming? Why are you having so many children? Third point is that assuming aspirations of young adults are on an upwards trajectory, their expected income isn't likely to parallel this rise, which makes the prospect of having fewer children feel more realistic. In other words, because let's look at the Zoomers. The Zoomers know they're never going to own a house. They're never going to make a fuck ton of money. They're never going to have all this stuff. So they're going to lower their expectations for having children to accommodate it because they know they can't afford the children. In Lutz's view, these three factors will contribute towards a downward spiral in the number of future births. And yeah, I'd say he's exactly right. Page 160. Another big chunk here. All right, page 160, second full paragraph. This is where the aforementioned demographic time bomb comes in. Population experts, who have been wrong about everything so far, and scientists, who have settled the science, fear that future generations will struggle to meet the needs of an ever-increasing number of older adults and retired workers and their pension/social security obligations. Really? You guys just now figured this out. Ponzi schemes don't last forever. Regarding countries where the fertility rate has dropped, particularly in North America, Asia, and Europe, the United Nations Population Funds report State of the World Population 2018 noted, quote, with larger groups of older people and a shrinking labor force, these countries face potentially weaker economics in the near term, unquote. Yes, they do. Which, of course, will also contribute to people having fewer children. Because when you have to pay more taxes to support these old people who will not fucking die and go away, well, now you have less money to have children of your own. And even though Somalia is spitting out a bunch of kids, there's only so many Somalians you can import. Because eventually, even Somalia is not going to be able to fucking resupply every country on earth that's destroyed its population and given welfare to its boomers. The Somalians are not going to be able to spit out enough babies to maintain all of those Ponzi schemes. In most developed areas of the world, the proportion of older adults already exceeds that of children. Yes, the number of boomers I see compared to the number of children I see, yes. And by 2015, 1 in 6 people in the world will be over age 65, an increase from 1 in 11 in 2019. There will be far fewer people of working age to support those who are over 65. As the population ages, the ratio of older adults to working adults is projected to rise. In the United States, for example, in 2020, there are about 3.5 working adults for every adult of retirement age. Holy shit. So for every fucking boomer on welfare, there's 3.5 people supporting that fucking boomer. By 2060, that proportion is expected to shrink to 2.5, and thus your taxes will have to go up accordingly to keep those boomers living in the, well, it's in 2060. Will the boomers still be alive in 2060? God, they might be, some of them. The way they fucking cling to life, the way they just refuse to go the fuck away. Since economically active people, economically active, you mean people who create things and do stuff? Since economically active people pay considerably more in income tax and other taxes, while economically inactive people, such as children and older adults and niggers, tend to be bigger, and women tend to be bigger recipients of government spending in public education, healthcare, and pensions, an increase in the dependency ratio would cause fiscal problems for the government of that country. Now, hold on. How are older adults economically inactive? Maybe they're economically inactive in the sense that they're not working a job and getting paid. But they're certainly spending money. Right? I've bitched about this recently, right? The boomers leaving nothing behind. What are they doing with all of their money? They're not leaving it to their children. You know, they're selling their houses. They're buying the RV. They're buying the fucking chase car. They're putting fuel in the RV. They're living in expensive apartments and retirement homes. And they're going on cruises. And they're buying the medication to keep themselves alive, right? They're spending all of this money on stuff that enhances their happiness in life in the moment. But none of it becomes any form of wealth that is passed down to their children or their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren. So here's a possible solution for this, given that we know that these things are happening. What if there's a special boomer tax? Boomer sales tax. So if I go and I buy an RV, I pay whatever, $100,000, and I pay whatever tax. The boomers, if you're a boomer and you buy something, there should be an additional sales tax on that, specifically because you're not contributing to the overall economy. You don't have a job, right? So you're not creating anything. You're not keeping the electricity flowing. You're not driving a bus to get people from one point to another. You're not driving a truck so that you can get cheap shit from China to Walmart so that overweight people can buy the cheap shit, right? You're not a carpenter. You're not building homes. All of those people, they're doing things that generate some kind of economic activity. And in many cases, like people who keep the electricity going, make the world a better place. But as a boomer, spending money on yourself, you're contributing almost nothing to society. I mean, yes, in buying the RV, okay, so you're keeping the RV dealership in business and you're employing some people there and you employ, so you're contributing a little bit. Right? But you're not contributing the same amount as the man who climbs up that tower to fix the electrical transformer. So there should be a boomer sales tax. If you're over the age of 65 and you buy anything at all, you should pay like an additional 10, 15, 20% tax to make up for the fact that you're not doing a fucking thing to contribute to society and you are in fact a parasite. And hell with that level of thinking, women should pay an extra 30% tax on everything they purchase because there's no greater parasites other than the Jews on Western civilization than women. The potential impact of these shifts, quote, are beyond huge, unquote, says Daryl Bricker, PhD, a demographic commentator and co-author of Empty Planet, The Shock of Global Population Decline. Quote, there are questions about how to support an aging population. Yeah, the question is, why should we support them? Euthanasia. Quote, there are questions about how to support an aging population and a need to rethink all aspects of how public money is spent on pensions, healthcare, city infrastructure, schools, the military. Those are young people's games. What happens when there aren't enough young people? Who's going to pay for retirement? When you have a consumption-based economy, what happens when your population is old and the wealth recedes with the older resides? Sorry. What happens when you have... Blah, 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 blah. God damn it. When you have a consumption-based economy, what happens when your population is old and the wealth resides with the older generation, unquote. These are good questions he's asking. Maybe I should seek out this book and give it a read. So yeah, what happens when there aren't enough young people? Well, the answer is obvious. You try to import more of them from Somalia, but when that runs out, you have to raise taxes or print money. You could also cut benefits, but that's not really a viable option because old people don't have anything to do other than sit around on the internet complaining and voting and all the other stuff. Politicians are not going to fuck with old people, right? Old, like my mother loves to go on about how the Republicans are going to take away Social Security. No, they're not. Nobody's taking away your fucking Social Security. This isn't going to happen. There's no politician anywhere on the planet Earth with the balls to turn off the fucking retirement benefits of a bunch of fucking old people. Any person who would do that, I would do it in a heartbeat, is never going to get elected. Who's going to pay for the retirement? Who is going to pay for it? See, now there was this time when you could get a job and you'd have the job for 20, 30, 40 years and you'd retire and your company would pay your pension. Now, even that is eventually doomed to economic failure because you have the same problem as you get more and more people on retirement. Well, your company has to make more and more money in order to fund that pension. So how does that work out? Eventually, that's going to collapse too, but at least with that model, it's somewhat decentralized as opposed to a system where everybody is relying on McGovernment to provide for their retirement. Because God forbid any of you save any money. And now that the economy is so goddamn fucked, I mean, does the average Zoomer, yes, there's always the Zoomer who buys the right shit in the stock market, but the average Zoomer nowadays with their four fucking jobs, you know, DoorDash, what do you call the thing where you drive a car for somebody, Uber, and then they work part-time in a restaurant, and then, you know, who whatever. But I mean, what are the odds of your Zoomers saving money on their own for retirement? When you have a consumption-based economy, which we do here, I've talked about this, our economy is entirely based on consuming things. There's no creation, there's no building of wealth that could be passed down. It's all consumption in the moment. Where does all your money go? Well, let's see, I have my streaming services. Okay, well, streaming Netflix, that doesn't create wealth that can be handed down. You know, going out to eat, okay, that doesn't create any wealth that could be handed down. Buying medication for my personality, okay, that doesn't create any wealth that could be handed down. I went out to a nightclub, that didn't create it, right? It's all consumption. Go to Walmart, buy cheap shit, use it, throw it away, go buy more cheap shit. What happens when your population is old and wealth resides with the older generation? Well, it's exactly what I've told you happened. The older generation, the boomers, they have the wealth and they're spending it. They're buying consumption items and they're transferring that wealth away from themselves, where it cannot be passed down to their children and grandchildren, assuming they have any. They're transferring that wealth to the corporations. They give the wealth to the cruise ship corporation so that they can go out and consume a cruise on the ocean. That's what happens to it. It ends up in the hands of the corporations, which is not inherently evil. A corporation making money, I'm not arguing that this is inherently evil. I'm arguing that the more money the boomers give to the corporations, the less money the boomers can hand down to their children and children's children, assuming they have them. And if they have them, and that makes those people even more poor than they already are, which means they're less likely to have more children, which means your fucking population declines. These shifts have many potential consequences for societies. These include, quote, reductions in economic growth, no shit, decreased tax revenue, no shit, greater use of Social Security with fewer contributors, no shit, and increasing health care and other demands prompted by an aging population, no shit, unquote. According to the 2017 Global Burden of Disease Study, in the United States, a doubling in the number of adults over 65, which is expected by 2060, doubling of fucking over 65 by 2060, could lead to more than a 50% increase. Yes, it will lead to more than a 50% increase in the number of older adults requiring nursing home care by 2030. Well, yes, of course. Yes, my God, we don't need fucking reports to tell us this shit. All these fucking people that are getting old without children, they're all going to need to be in a fucking nursing home at some point so that they can lay there and be neglected and shit on themselves. And how long can Somalia continue to produce people to work in these nursing homes? How we manage these changes will have significant implications not only on the economy, but also on our culture, politics, and nearly every aspect of society. Yes, the boomers are going to destroy everything. In the United States, these changes could lead to a, quote, epic, unquote, crisis for Medicare and Social Security. Really? Warns Daniel Perrin, a nationally known policy leader and lobbyist on healthcare, public debt, and senior issues. After all, both programs are financed through taxes that are tied to workers' earnings. A decline in the working age population could drain the financial reservoirs of these resources. It could. You know, it could. If you have fewer people paying taxes, you might have less money. It could happen. Yet Perrin says many people aren't aware of these demographic shifts. Well, probably because most people are still propagandized into believing that the world is overpopulated. And we need to stop having children to save the planet from global warming. Because most people don't understand anything. They don't understand where Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid money comes from. They don't understand that to redistribute wealth, you have to create wealth. They don't understand any of these things that are happening and taking place. It's just, well, it'll always be there because it's the government. Yet Perrin says many people aren't aware of these demographic shifts and, quote, those that do know about this have a hard time wrapping their minds around it. They have a hard time squaring this with human history, unquote. As a result, policymakers in the United States are unprepared for these population shifts and the economic and social support challenges that are sneaking in along with them. For the year 2091, the Social Security Administration predicts that expenditures will exceed income by at least 4.48% and possibly 5.97% if fertility rates stay low. And yes, fertility rates are going to stay. Expenditures exceeding income by 4.5%. Yeah. We're doomed.